Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Martin Luther King Day is a week from today. We'll be doing a King Day weekend live event at the Brooklyn Museum next Sunday and our annual King Day readings program next Monday. More about those later. But for this week leading up to King Day this year, we'll do a three-part series on different aspects of the African-American male experience. We begin that series now with questions about proving yourself as an African-American entrepreneur. There is some good news to report in this area. The journalist we'll be speaking with cites census figures showing the number of black men who own businesses jumped by more than a third from 1997 to 2002 to a total of 571,000 people nationwide. But issues of identity and perception abound, including how much to use images of whites in sales materials or even hire white staff specifically to make white clients feel more comfortable. Joining me now is Keith Alexander, Washington Post correspondent, a contributor to the Post's ongoing series called Being a Black Man. Keith, thanks so much for coming on WNYC. Hello from New York.
It's indeed my pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the businessman you profiled in your article who's actually going to join us for a short time in a little while, Antoine Ford.
Yes, well, this is a very interesting company here. Antoine Ford and Andre Rogers are the founders of a company called Enlighten. They are an information technology company based in Washington, D.C. And the company started probably around 2000, 1998, 1999, 2000 time frame. And basically these gentlemen met in college. They met at George Washington University, and they do work for major companies. Like they manage websites, they manage operational systems for companies such as Fannie Mae and AOL and various courts here in Washington and even on nationwide. So this company is doing really well. They have about 100, well, actually about 60 employees now, and they're hoping to get about 120 employees by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
They have about $4 million in sales, and they hope to double that by the end of this year as well. So they're doing quite well. They're also part of an 8A program, which is a federal set-aside program for minority-owned companies. Now, what's very interesting about this company, about Enlighten, and one of the things that kind of struck a chord in this story that ran a couple of months ago was just some of the strategies that they have adopted to help them achieve success. And when you bring on the CEO of Enlighten, I'm sure he'll be able to talk about that. But some of the strategies, if you will, some readers and some people who even work at the company kind of question, especially a company called Enlightened, if you will.
Yes.
And you actually mentioned some of them. For example, they are very strategic in how their website looks. If you go to their homepage, the page does not feature any people of color on their homepage. It has about seven people. It's a stock photo on their homepage I think four white men and a white woman.
Hmm.
And the actual employees of Enlighten is very diverse. They have people of Indian descent, African-American, obviously. But you wouldn't see that when you look at the actual homepage.
Well, we'll ask Mr. Ford why he sets up his homepage like that when he comes on. But how much of an issue do you think this is across black business-owning America?
Well, that's a very good question. And actually, I talked to several people who talked about that. And actually, it really is. It's an issue of how do you let people know everything there is to know about you? I mean, in other words, do you allow people to know that, yes, I am a black-owned business, particularly when people may not feel too comfortable? Because in this day and age, unfortunately, when you say black-owned business, that conjures up, for many people, a stereotype. It conjures up either, well, maybe this company is not as good because they are black-owned, they are minority-owned. This company may have some issues. And so how much of themselves do these entrepreneurs really allow prospective customers to know about them? And so it's a double-edged sword. It's sort of, you know, when I talked to the dean of Howard University School of Business, and he said that that's one of the biggest dilemmas that minority businesses have, is that do you let people know exactly that you are a minority-owned business, or do you keep that to yourself? And that's one of the things that some businesses, you know, that's a struggle that some businesses actually have.
And let me open up the phones on this question and the others that I guess you're about to raise. We'll take calls from not just men, though we're framing this as part of a series on the black male experience. African-American business owners, how do you promote your companies? And if you fear discrimination against your company because of racial discrimination in America, how do you deal with that? Do you hide the identity of the ownership, as apparently happened in the case that I guess from the Washington Post is profiling, or how else do you deal with it? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. My guest is Keith Alexander, Washington Post correspondent and a contributor to their series called Being a Black Man. And Keith, you were going to add something?
I was. And also what was interesting was their hiring practice. They were very strategic in hiring people, white men, white women, who will make their clients comfortable. And that's something that's very, very interesting. You know, when they first started out, it was a predominantly black-owned company. They were just themselves, and they hired people mainly who looked like them. But they were told that to be successful, particularly when it came to federal contracts, trying to get contracts from federal agencies, that they needed to, quote-unquote, lighten up. They needed to get people on their team, on their sales team, so that when they walked into the room and they were dealing with white men or white women who were making the decision as to whether or not to hire this company, they had someone who looked like them, someone that they could relate to. And so they were very strategic in making sure that whenever they go out on a sales pitch, that they have a white man or a white woman with them.
Let me also bring in here Michael Woodard, who's president of Woodard and Associates, who I believe you mentioned in the article, a human resource consulting firm. Who also works in this field, a human resource consulting firm based in Washington, D.C., Woodard and Associates. Michael Woodard, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Tell us about your company and give us your reaction to the issues that our guest Keith has been talking about.
Well, I come at this from two different angles. One is, as you mentioned, I am the owner of a human resource consulting firm. We do, our primary client is the federal government, so many of the issues that Mr. Alexander has mentioned are very, very, very on target. I also come at this from the angle of being a sociologist, having written a book entitled Black Entrepreneurs in America, Stories of Struggle and Success. And that book was published by Rutgers University Press in 1997. And as I read the article by Mr. Alexander, I said, yes, 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 this is absolutely what I found in my book. I interviewed some 60 different entrepreneurs across the country and asked them about their experiences and certainly how they market themselves and how they handle their employment practice, their hiring practices are two key issues. And in regard to the issue here, entrepreneurs want to be hired or selected for contracts because they are trained, because they are educated, because they're experienced, and they're skilled. They certainly are not hired because of their race. However, race frequently gets in the way of being evaluated fairly on their education, their experience, and their skill. And so that's the reason why a tradition of entrepreneurs have hid the fact that they head up a company. So as not to be subject to retribution.
Right, to racism.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And in your case, how far do you go there, and how does it make you feel?
Well, I happen to have spent a lot of time looking at this large issue, and so in my particular case, if you look at my website, you'll see my picture up there, for better or for worse. The reality of the matter is that the message that Mr. Alexander wants to get out there and that I want to get out there is that entrepreneurs, African-American entrepreneurs, are experienced. They are well-trained. In the case of Mr. Ford, he has a master's degree from George Washington University. In my own research, I found that what I describe as second-generation entrepreneurs are individuals who not only have BA degrees, but have master's or MBAs, and have many years of experience that have prepared them to head up the companies that they're heading. And how they get to that point of starting their business was exactly the experience that Antoine Ford and his colleagues had. That is, they work in corporations anywhere from 5 to 20 years or so and come up against the glass ceiling. And they recognize that they are not going to be the president of the company that they're working for. They're not even going to be the vice president. And so in order to experience the greatest economic opportunities that they can for themselves, they start their own businesses.
And Ryan, that's a really good point which the gentleman made, is that there are some similarities out there. A lot of African American entrepreneurs today are second generation entrepreneurs. Even with the Antoine Ford, his parents owned an upholstery shop in Washington, D.C. So he's a second generation entrepreneur. And again, as it was stated earlier, the founders of this company worked in corporate America. Antoine Ford kept trying to advance in corporate America, trying to become a senior manager, and was unable to do so. So he said, "You know what? It's time for me to start my own business." And that's what you're finding here. And what's different from the entrepreneurs today versus, let's say, 10 years ago, is that we're finding that these companies are having a much more diverse customer base. Entrepreneurs of the 1960s and the 70s primarily thrived on black entrepreneurs primarily thrived on black consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the difference is they're going into different fields. Black entrepreneurs are going into construction. They're going into consulting. They're going into economics. They're going into IT, which is what Antoine Ford did, which means their customer base is much broader than just African Americans. And because it's much broader than just African Americans, then they have to utilize a different strategy than their parents and their grandparents did, who owned their own businesses as well.
We're going to continue in a minute. Keep talking about poor Antoine Ford, who's had to listen to you talk about him and me talk about him, and he's going to be able to talk about himself when he joins us after this break. And we'll take some phone calls as we continue with Keith Alexander, Washington Post correspondent, who wrote the article, A Chance to Get Into the Room, Black Entrepreneurs Grapple with Proving Themselves, and Michael Woodard from Woodard & Associates, a human resources consulting firm. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Look forward to seeing many of you at the Brooklyn Museum Sunday afternoon at 4 with Kevin Powell and me and others. And leading up to this week, we'll be doing 3 segments on different aspects of African-American manhood. And we are in part 1 now with questions about proving yourself as an African-American entrepreneur. And, of course, this applies to men and women, but it's inspired by an article in the Washington Post's Being a Black Man series by journalist Keith Alexander, who is with us, as well as Michael Woodard, president of Woodard & Associates, a human resources consulting firm based in D.C., and also joining us now is Antoine Ford, CEO of Enlightened Inc., a technology consulting firm profiled in this article. Mr. Ford, thanks so much for coming on. Hello from New York.
Hello, how are you? Thank you very much.
Good. So I think you've been listening to the conversation.
Yes.
And one of the issues that was raised prominently was your website, and you're not the only company that does this, does not indicate at all that it's a black-owned firm. It's primarily white people with, according to my guest from the Post, no black faces among the people shown on the website homepage. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been a source of, I guess, the major discussion that in the aftermath of the article. And I think as we talked about it, our perspective was, first and foremost, we weren't selling the fact that I'm a black IT consulting firm, or I'm going to give you black services. We were selling the fact that we were a consulting firm that is able to do whatever we need to do to get the job done and to exceed the expectations of our customers. And so when we originally developed the website, it was developed with stock footage, and we said, go develop the website. And then when they said, well, do you want to put your picture there? And that became an interesting article. And Andre and I said, no, I don't think it's necessary. We want to make sure that, you know, we sell who we are as a company, not my color. I love who I am. I love being a black man. I wouldn't change it for anything that anyone could give to me. But the bottom line is, I'm not selling black services. I'm selling services. I do use the platform that I have as a business owner to be able to give back to my community, whether it's adopting a high school or working with the inner city kids, because I am a product of the inner city in Washington, D.C. But nevertheless, what I am delivering is services. And I don't want to get perceived as, okay, well, because you're black, you can only do these things. And we faced that very, very early on, even in our personal careers.
So the issue that was raised was that maybe you went beyond not making the website revolve around you, your personal identity or your racial identity, but to the point where there are various people depicted on the website and none of them are African American. Did it even cross your mind?
No, at the time it didn't, until I think in the last few years. One time we had a call from someone who said, and if you look at the sub pages, I think there is someone who is African American on one of the sub pages, but on the main page, that was the biggest issue. And I think someone raised it. It was an Asian person who was interviewing and said, you don't have anyone that's Asian on your website. What does that mean? And my attitude was, oh, really? Let me take a look at it. Because for the most part, we're selling the services on there. But I think when that issue was raised during the interviews, it was something that perplexed me and something that upset me to a certain degree, because I never realized that people could take it as, well, you're ashamed of who you are, or are you selling out? And as I told during the interview, that I said I needed to go pray on this thing, because it really upset me from a perspective of people can perceive someone as just selling out, as opposed to the fact that I'm selling services, particularly for someone like myself who sort of puts my money and my time where my mouth is when it comes to my community, because I do spend a fair amount of time either coaching kids or working with kids. And it's always been my contention that, you know, I'm doing what I need to do to help raise my community, but in my business, I'm selling my services.
So,
but it was something that was alarming to me.
On the flip side of this, the article refers to somebody who is consulting you and said Enlightened, your company, needed to, quote,
lighten up,
yeah, meaning hire some white staff members to succeed in D.C. so you didn't appear to be an all-black firm. Did you do that?
Well, yeah, we actually did. We actually said, you know what? We need to diversify, because if we had a situation where people are saying, you know what? You're not diverse enough. You need to diversify. You need to lighten up. Okay, well, if that's what we need to do, let's diversify, because I don't see it as a negative in diversification.
It's very much a positive. And again here, whether the firm is owned by an African-American, a Latino-American, Asian-American, what have you, they want to attract business not because of their ethnicity, but because of the high-quality services that they provide. And so in Mr. Ford's case of presenting his website in the way that he did, was to focus on the services that he provided, the high-skilled services that are provided.
So just like, say, a pharmaceutical company might put black people in its TV commercials specifically to appeal to black consumers, you might hire some whites for your sales staff or put white people's images in your sales literature in order to appeal to white consumers as part of your client base, because like it or not, that's the way people respond?
I mean, I think tangentially. I mean, I, to be honest with you, my focus is normally what's going to get my customers' attention fastest. So it's usually around, you know, look at the marketing side. What buzzword are they going to see? But I don't want to turn them off. I mean, I tell my staff, when you meet a person, you got a few seconds before their perception of you, they take their preconceived notion and put it upon you. As soon as you walk and see me, you're going to notice that I'm a black man. You're not going to be confused as, well, is he black or not? You're going to notice that. So my perspective is I'm not hiding who I am because you know who I am. Even if you look at – some people look at names on a resume. If you see Antoine Ford and the way I may spell my name, you may do some analysis to say, chances are this person may be African-American. But my perspective, again, as the gentleman said from Woodward, I'm selling my services. I use my platform to help my community, but I'm selling my services first.
And he's selling his service to a diverse global community.
Exactly.
In my company, Woodard & Associates, we do a lot of diversity training and a lot of diversity consultation. And one thing that I say to AT&T, to Procter & Gamble's, and other large corporations, very, very similar to Enlighten, is that your workforce and the people who work for you must reflect your customer base. Mm-hmm. And your customer base is not just a local community, but rather a national and even an international customer base. And so your workforce, to some extent, must reflect that. And so what was said to Mr. Ford was really very, very appropriate. Again, if you want to do business with a diverse clientele, you must have a diverse, you must meet their needs.
You know, Ryan, it was very interesting when the story ran. I got a lot of interesting phone calls and emails, not just from African American business owners, but from women business who own their own businesses, and from even from some Latinos. I mean, this is a story that is universal to anyone who owns a business. It's about strategy. It's about strategy of getting in the door and getting that contract. And this just happens to be the strategy that this company uses.
Mr. Woodard, here's an email that's come in from a listener that says, you are having an effective discussion of hiring and business decisions based on racial criteria. This is illegal. Do your guests understand the kind of legal risk they are taking on?
No, unfortunately, the person is
misinformed.
Yeah. I'm sure that Mr. Ford or Procter & Gamble or Eli Lilly or anyone else would not hire anybody who is not qualified for the job. And so we're not talking about hiring people who are not qualified for the job. We're talking about hiring people who are qualified for the job, who reflect the customer base that we want to serve. And so again here, if one is approaching a Latino community, I absolutely have Latino Americans on my team. I did a project in Puerto Rico. Absolutely, I had Puerto Ricans on my team. Again here, they were not Puerto Ricans who were untrained, but highly skilled and highly qualified. And talking about designing or developing a workforce that reflects the client base or the needs of the client base that you are attempting to attract, again here, we're talking about hiring people who are qualified and represent the diversity of the client base that you want to attract.
Let's take some phone calls. Michael in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good morning. However you put it, though, gentlemen, it strikes me that you are still not talking about equality, but assuaging bias. And that's rather fascinating to me. I mean, I curated this exhibition, Black Style Now, at the Museum of the City of New York, and we looked at how national advertisers were forced in the 1950s and 60s, not out of the goodness of their heart, but through the threats of African-Americans who used their products, to boycott unless they had representation of African-Americans in their national ads. And
and
it would seem to me that you're talking about doing the exact opposite, that you're talking about of going back to the good old days when, as a consequence of businesses feeling that they would be boycotted against in the South if they used African-Americans in their ads, they refused to use any African-Americans who were their customers, too, just like white people in the South, in their advertisements.
Let me try to address that in this way. First of all, African-American-owned firms are more likely to hire African-Americans than majority-owned firms. Indeed, more than 50% of African-American-owned firms employ African-Americans. In contrast, majority-owned firms employ typically from 2 to 4, 5, 6% African-Americans. And so African-Americans are indeed the main source of employment for African-Americans. Now, I'll just stop that right there.
Well, nonetheless, despite the employment record, it still seems to me that you are promoting bias in a symbolic way. In the same sort of way, you know, you look at a lot of national advertisers today, they advertise in national journals, and they have lots and lots of African Americans in their ads, but if you look at the editorial content of those magazines, you don't see very many articles that have to do with African Americans or Latinos, and it's a very Kafkaesque kind of universe out there.
Michael, thank you very much. Ed in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Good morning, gentlemen. I hope to try to explain the situation as the person who's advertising as he advertises. It's a neutral advertisement, which means that whatever bracket you're in, if you need those services, you're drawn to it. As a black person, we have to neutralize, we have to deflect those who don't want to do business with us simply because we're black. So if we were to use the images of all black people, some black people who need the services would use the services, but then it would deflect those who need the services who aren't black. So I understand what the strategy is. The strategy is to get them to use your product. And a black person, I'm sorry to say, doesn't have to put a black person in its ad in order for a black person to be drawn to that product if they're indeed in need of the services of that product. So that's sad that that's a strategy that we must impose, and most people don't understand that. So,
but you're saying that's reality.
Right. He's not selling himself out because yes. I'm listening to what he's saying. He's doing what he's doing, and he'll service black people as well as whomever. But in order for him to expand and be what quote-unquote successful is, he has to be able to be, how can I say?
I know what you're saying. You're saying to, and I think you made it very clear, to fight the, to get around the prejudice that's out there. So, Ed, thank you for your call.
And that's actually what the article, you know, part of the article was actually saying, and that's what, you know, Antoine Ford was saying, is that don't judge me by my business decision. I'm trying to get in the door.
Yes.
I'm trying to get my foot in the door. And once I get my foot in the door, then you can judge me on my work. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. Ms. Ford is on the line, so he can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in the door.
And Mr. Ford, there was one other assumption that was made in the article by one of the sources that I wanted to ask you about. One of your employees who was cited as thinking that because you were a black-owned firm and getting some contracts as a result of federal government set-asides, that they wouldn't have to work very hard in selling the company because it was just going to come rolling your way because you're black.
And that was actually a white employee who said that.
Yeah, and he had a pretty big misconception because I think his perspective was of many people that this is a welfare program for business owners. You know, if you get a set aside, it's for the business owners. And my attitude was like, no way. I mean, the bottom line from my perspective is I don't want to be known. Certainly, the 8A program and other programs like itself are necessary because if you don't force people to do certain business with minorities, they won't. But so those programs are necessary, but they're not the end-all to be-all. To be honest with you, in our situation, once we started to develop ourselves, we won several full and open competitions with several large companies in government contracting that were not set-asides. And that's all of a sudden when we did that, people started to take notice of, wow, they're winning outside of their quote-unquote arena now. They're no longer getting the set-aside programs. They're winning in a straight-up competition. And for us, that's important for us to be known for, again, for our services. I mean, I was listening earlier when you were talking about, you know, the series and Black History Month coming up, and mm-hmm. most people have forgotten what King said about, you know, judge me for the content of my character. You know, don't get into the fact that, you know, when I walk down the street, if I'm a black man, I still can't catch a cab in many parts of D.C. But the bottom line is where we're looking at is the programs that are out there, that are the set aside programs, are necessary because they get you started.
Or in this case, judge me by the content of my workload, that employee learned when he pulled his fourth or fifth all-nighter with you.
Yeah.
Keith Alexander from The Washington Post, you wrote this article, before you all go, in the context of your series on being a black man.
Yes.
Do these same issues all apply to being a black woman in business, or is there something additional? Because the article did not really mention gender.
That's correct. And I guess, as you pointed out, this was part of a year-long series where we did about 15 articles during the course of 2006, which actually can be found on the website, WashingtonPost.com. And if you go to the website, you can find the link to all these 15 articles, various aspects of being a black man. But no, this was mainly focused on just on that, on just on what men have to deal with, on black men particularly. But women, of course, have to deal with yet another layer. And what's the other layer? Sexism, and having to deal with, you know, not particularly black women having to deal with race and gender, and that's just a whole nother story to have to deal with. But it was interesting enough, if you look at the numbers, black women are starting more businesses than black men, which is also very interesting. Which, you know, lends the fact that maybe it's easier. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners will disagree. Maybe it's easier for black women owned businesses to thrive than black men.
What do you think?
Know.
What do you think, Mr. Ford? Maybe despite sexism in the world, there's more discrimination against black men than black women today.
Well, I mean, if you look, I was recently looking at a study in terms of the amount of money people make, according to race, and black men are still on the bottom of the totem pole. And so I haven't really looked into the issues, but I know, in looking at the statistics, more black women are getting involved in starting their own business.
And it's also not just discrimination. We know that black women are getting degrees at a faster rate than black men. So it's part of the whole nexus of issues that black boys and men have to face today.
Exactly.
Mr. Werder, the last word on this?
Well, African-American men and African-American women experience the same kinds of barriers in terms of attempting to start and sustain businesses. Women do have an additional layer there of having to deal with sexism and sexual discrimination. However, there is what is important to note is that there is an explosion of the African-American entrepreneurial spirit among African-Americans. African-Americans are starting businesses at a rate faster than any other group in the country. And again, it's very important that business initiation rate sustain itself, because in terms of the development of the African-American community, the best hope is for jobs created by African-American-owned businesses.
And, Ron, if I could just throw some quick numbers out there to you. You did point out the number of black-owned businesses, 571,501 in 2002. But what's interesting is that African-Americans represent the smallest group of who receive loans from the Small Business Administration.
Yeah.
African-Americans only receive about 7% of the total loans issued by the SBA in 2006.
What percent are they applying for?
I'm sorry?
What percent are they applying for?
Well, 7% or $533 million. What I'm trying to do is also give you a comparison versus white businesses that receive 67%, and Asians receive 13%, and Latinos receive 11%. So it still seems to be inequitable in terms of trying to get those loans mm-hmm. out there from the SBA. So there's still a lot of barriers, for whatever the reason,
that's
in terms of getting funding.
Where we leave it, Keith Alexander, Washington Post reporter, Michael Woodard, president of Woodard and Associates, a human resources consulting firm in D.C., and Antoine Ford, president of Enlightened, Inc., a technology consulting company in D.C. Thank you all very much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good luck, everybody.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. Writer, author, culture critic Douglas Rushkoff on the backlash he's been receiving online since blogging about his Christmas Eve mugging. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.